Andrea, thank you so much for being here. Andrea Moorhead is a 7-time Emmy-winning TV news anchor, executive producer, voiceover talent, model, motivational speaker, author, writer, and co-build director of the Indiana chapter of End Workplace Abuse. And Andrea, thank you so much for taking time and taking part in the conversation titled Navigating Workplace Bullying, Finding Resilience, and Feeling Joy, Even in Crisis.
I'm so happy to be here, Andy. It's so good to be with you to talk about this very important topic.
Yeah, and we had a chance to talk a couple of weeks ago briefly, and boy, oh boy, do we have a lot to talk about.
So, I know, right? We didn't have enough time.
I know. So now we do, and boy, I guess I'll start with this. First of all, we both spent careers in television, and so we have a lot in common, and I often thought that what I and thusly we experienced, although our circumstances were different, it was just television.
Yeah.
You were in Indianapolis as an anchor on the air. I was an executive producer in New York off the air. But it's not just television, but we're going to talk about television production and all that first. So let's talk about your circumstance. You've said, quote, speaking up has its consequences, and boy, does it ever. It also has its rewards, which overshadow the trauma. Tell me about that philosophy and how you came about it.
The consequences would include the fact that after 21 years working at that station, blood, sweat, and tears, weekends away from my family, everything that was required, and then some in terms of my loyalty to the station, I realized that after speaking up, how many people in my situation end up becoming what I call blackballed and or blacklisted in their industry.
Yeah.
So once they speak up and they leave, it's so challenging, if almost impossible for them within their industry to get back into it because they have been blackballed.
Yeah.
I know for a fact that's happened to me. There's no reason in the world why, and you mentioned all of the wonderful accolades before as part of the introduction,
yeah,
that I should not still be working in the industry. I love what I do. I loved it. I still love it. It's in me. It will always be part of me. But I also believe, Andy, that as journalists, and do you know this, we're in the business to hold people, institutions, politicians, companies accountable. And for me, it would have been, I would have been disingenuous had I allowed the behavior to continue and to have not spoken up and said something about it. Hopes of change. My entire motivation was for the culture to change so that I could continue to work there and also make it better for those people who would come behind me. Yeah. What I think is really interesting is once I spoke up, Andy, I heard from a number, over a dozen people who used to work at that station who left for similar reasons, but didn't speak up when they were going through it.
And it's so hard to do.
Yeah. And it's interesting. They were all like, you know, oh my gosh, thank you so much for speaking about, you know, what happened. It happened to me too. Was it this person? Was it that person? I mean, so many people had the same kind of conversation and experience, sadly, but no one wanted to talk about it. But I genuinely cared about my city. I cared about my station. I cared about my community. And I wanted us to be that agency that we espouse for and tell everyone else that they should be. You know, we're doing stories on other companies, other positions, other people, and we're holding a mirror up to them, but we're not holding the mirror up to ourselves and being honest.
Yeah.
And so for me, it was about integrity, and I just could not live with myself and allow it to happen without speaking about it so that it could help somebody else.
So let me ask this, and I know that this has been heart-wrenching for you, and in my estimation, it really doesn't matter how many years go by, this stuff, whether it's new and fresh, or whether it's years or decades, boy, it stays with you. It really
stays with you forever.
A form of trauma. So you talked about the behaviors, and I'm not sure how much of this you can get into specifically.
Oh, I can get into it all.
Okay, great. So let me ask you this. What were the behaviors, the mismanagement, if you will, the workplace aggression, the psychological enhancement that you experienced?
Yeah, absolutely. It all began when we got new management, you know. In this business, you get a new manager, a new news director, a new GM.
Always.
Depending on who they are, they definitely decide and determine what the work culture will be. And I had some very interesting kind of run-ins, if you will, with news directors, assistant news directors, some of the executive producers. And when I went to the general manager, including the VP of news at the time, or promotions, who is now the general manager, it was like what I said to them meant nothing. They literally turned a blind eye. So some of the things that I experienced, some of the unconscionable behaviors, and as you mentioned, it is a trauma that will last with me forever. I remember where I was, what I looked like, what I was wearing, what I said, how they responded, what they looked like. Like I remember like it was yesterday.
Yeah.
But some of the issues that I experienced included, you know, I came back from cancer treatments and my hair was growing back. And I got reprimanded for wearing my natural hair on air after the 5:30 newscast. I'll never forget it. I get off the air, I walk into the studio and he goes, come into my office. There was that. There was many stories that I had prepared that were taken away from me, but not giving me the reason why. But I understood over time that it was because they wanted to promote another female anchor. They wanted her to have the shine. There were emails that were sent that I actually sent to my news director, assistant news director, and three other producers about a story idea that I had. And they inadvertently were talking about me and inadvertently sent it to me in a reply all.
Wow. And
I got it, sent it to the general manager. He said nothing. There was nothing about, nothing at all. So those were just some of the few things that happened. Another one, five employees, colleagues, co-anchors, and producers were talking about me and making bets on whether or not I would return after chemo treatments, if I would call out sick that day. So some of those, and there's so many more issues as well, lies by the general manager, not general manager, but by the news director about why my stories weren't airing. And just the manipulation and the gaslighting, I just got sick of it. And when you're going to the top person in the organization and you're saying, hey, this is what's going on, and they do nothing about it, I had to make a choice. It's either the environment will change for better, or I will change my environment. And after the email fiasco, that's when I said, I'm done, because it clearly was not going to change. So those are just some of the few examples, and I've talked about them on my own personal podcast and YouTube show, but it's still heartbreaking. It's still heartbreaking because the triggers are real. You know, like you, I still watch news a lot. I'm always going to be a newsie. And there are moments when out of the blue, something will trigger me and it will take me back to a conversation, a moment, a day. So yeah, it's been very, very challenging. I mean, I had to go to therapy, and that's when I began to realize that this was not just in my head, because I was, you know, ruminating about it every day, trying to figure out, well, what am I doing? What am I saying? Do I need to bring in more, you know, blueberry muffins to the team? I mean, like trying to figure out, is it me?
Yeah.
And when I met with my therapist, she clearly said, honey, she started crying with me in the beginning because I was explaining some of the things that were going on.
Yeah.
And she said, you should be dead right now. And I just went, what? Because that's exactly how I had been feeling. Like I could see my body at the bottom of the mountain.
Yeah.
And one foot was about to take a step. The next one was, I was about to go over.
Let me ask you this, if I may.
That's horrible.
And so obviously you had some mental anguish, I would call
absolutely.
Trauma. Were there also physiological problems that came about? And obviously you're dealing with cancer, which you've been very open about. So how you deal with all that at one time, you're such a strong person, but still you had to feel alone. I often felt totally alone, even though I had a really good home life.
Mm-hmm.
This feeling when you're being abused at work. And again, we're going to be clear here. This is not about somebody. I'm not a Me Too person. I'm a privileged white person. I'm not nobody sexually harassed me. Nobody threw a stapler at my head gushing blood. But this kind of psychological harassment causing a feeling of being isolated really can have physiological damage to your body as well.
Oh, absolutely. You know, the number of people that I've interviewed for my show about this, they've experienced the same things that I have. Hair loss, depression, obviously, PTSD, the stress. They have had physiological issues. I believe to this day that my breast cancer was caused because of the stress that I had been enduring for years.
Yeah, and I believe it.
I believe that that's exactly what happened. We didn't have, I don't really have any family history. So I believe that it caused my sickness. And after I was going through the chemo and came thankfully out of the surgery and the radiation, And then I had another 2 years of immunotherapy treatment.
Yeah.
I began to just really think about how am I living? And the fact that I was able to make it through cancer and fight through that. And I believe that it really set me up so that I could fight what has been the biggest battle and challenge in my life, which was workplace abuse. But yeah. When I understood what it was clear to me that the environment wasn't going to change.
Yeah. And in my experience, it doesn't change either. But it's so tough. And I've heard you kind of say this implicitly and explicitly, which is, you know, I devoted my life to this job, loved it. And same with me. I love being in journalism. I love being kind of at the center of things, if you will. I love storytelling.
Yeah.
And to have to say goodbye to that is so, so wrenching. And for me a little bit, and I wonder if you felt this way, it's a little bit like, and this is not the healthiest way to look at it, of course, is, you know, then the bullies are winning.
Oh, yeah. My gosh. Absolutely. That's exactly what I said.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I tell my therapist, I said, but they won. I said, I lost my job. They took my job away from me. I'll never forget. I was sitting in my car in St. Petersburg, Florida, on the edge of the road because I was just devastatedly crying and I couldn't stop. And she says, pull over. So I pull over to a gas station and I'm sitting there talking with her, just, you know, belly aching. And she said, come to, you know, and I finally took a couple of deep breaths. She goes, honey, you might not be there anymore. You might feel as if they took your job, but they did not take away your career. And when she said that, it hit me like a ton of bricks. I'm like, you're absolutely right. Who I am, what I bring to the table, my value and worth, my work ethic, who I am as a professional, that's who I am outside of this place. And so I had to really rewire my brain to think, okay, they didn't take away my gifts and talent. I can now just use it in a different way for myself and for other people and choose who I collaborate with.
Yeah. And I want to talk about that, about the work you're doing and the inspiration that you are now to people who have been through this. But I got to stop. I can't help myself because I was an executive producer for quite a long time here. Uh-huh. You're terrific on camera.
You're so sweet.
You're terrific. I mean, I've worked with a lot of talent and you're as good as any and you're terrific on camera. So I hope you continue doing it in whatever form works for you. So let me talk about that a little bit.
Yeah.
So in researching the interview that we're doing now, I came across your video series, and I think I have this right, 30 Signs That Your Mind Needs to Rest a Bit, Workplace Aggression and Bully Bosses. Mm-hmm. And I only wish you would have produced this series about 30 years ago, because it would have helped me a lot.
Right.
But having said that, this particular episode really resonated with me. You mentioned, and you used the word earlier, so that's why I wanted to come to it.
Oh.
You mentioned about ruminating.
Oh, yes.
You know, coming home and just going over and over your mind about what was happening to you at work. And I had the exact same feeling.
Mm-hmm.
And you said, as I recall in this one video episode, that one time you had driven home and all of a sudden you got home and you didn't even realize how you got.
I didn't
talk a little bit about that, because that resonates so much, I think, with so many of us who, that's such the problem. We're going through our mind, what did I do wrong? What did I do to deserve this when I'm such a good worker, such a hard devoted, such a productive worker? So tell me a little bit about that notion.
Yeah, it's so true. You are literally, at least in my experience, just ruminating over, why did this happen? Why did he say this? Why did she do that? Why aren't they helping? I'm going to them and telling them exactly what's happening, but they're doing absolutely nothing. Here's the truth. And as journalists, that's what we're supposed to be about, which is, you know, the truth, if you will, and here are the facts. And yet they weren't listening to me. They weren't hearing me. They weren't seeing me. And every day my life was filled with conversations with my mom and dad on my way home. And then I would get home and we were up until 2-3 o'clock in the morning with my husband talking about it.
Yeah.
And it just became incessantly challenging and really demoralizing, because the more I ruminated, the more depressed I became, because I realized I couldn't do anything about it, even though I was trying to figure it out. And I just finally got to the point, thanks to my therapist, she says, there's nothing you can do.
Yeah.
There's nothing you can do. And finally, when I realized it, I just let it go and said, okay, I've got to change my environment.
Yeah. And, you know, I really respect your therapist, having no idea who it is.
Yes, she's amazing.
If, you know, It seems to me, in my experience, that if you went to a therapist and said, well, let me give you, you know, the top 10 ways to fight off the bully boss first. And in fact, when I was writing my book, my experience, I looked on the internet and I had never even really realized how I had been mistreated because I just thought that was television in New York. And as we said at the outset, it's also television in Indianapolis. Mm-hmm. It's nonprofit in Louisiana, you know, and IT in San Francisco. So even though we both at television acknowledge that this is happening all over, and I want to get to how you're trying to fight this across the country.
Yeah.
But it was the kind of thing where I'm just thinking to myself, let me look online and see if I'd never done that. And there was some kind of popular story, you know, almost like Facebook lists and stuff, top 10 things to do to address your bully boss or to make it better with your bully boss. And I'll never forget, one of them was, in this case, his. So use his first name when you're talking. Hey, Bill, you know, the way we're communicating, Bill, I think we could do better if we I mean, the most ridiculous stuff. I tell the story in my book about I had a bully boss was literally like a former football player. And I had a boss that I loved. He got fired and I was put on this guy's team. And he was micromanaging
me. Oh, yeah.
He wanted me to CC him on every external email. And I was vice president of original programming. I wasn't a production assistant. And
Right.
And I knew the reason that he wanted to know who I was talking to because he wanted to put a kibosh on it. You know, he wanted to keep me down. Mm-hmm. And I thought, and I'd only been working with him for a few weeks. And this is not the longest story in the world. I'm almost done. But
no, you're fine. You're fine.
Thank you. And I was nervous. I was going to ask him to lunch. I thought, you know what? Let's get out of the office. Let's have a collegial one. You know, we're both, you know, interested in the same thing, getting good video, getting good content produced. But can you imagine? I was like 40 years old and I was nervous to ask my supervisor out to lunch, who was 10 years younger than me. Maybe that shouldn't matter, but, and I was office like 5 or 6 times, my heart beating, you know, and he wasn't there. And the 7th time he was there and I said, hey, let's grab some lunch and talk over the upcoming projects, you know. And he goes, Regal, sit your ass down and get back to your effing work.
Wow.
And then he said, we don't need to break bread. That's a quote. You know.
Like you remember those things, yes?
Yes, mm-hmm. yes. Mm-hmm. And I remember going to his office 3 doors down, you know, like you said. And it was just so dispiriting. I felt like an 8-year-old who had eaten, you know, 2 cookies instead of 1.
Things like that, they break your soul and your spirit. They really do.
And I'm also wondering along those lines, because I felt the same way about myself. And I think most of us do. You know, we're not talking about people that show up drunk or late, don't do assignments.
Right.
You know, you are a brilliant broadcaster, so hardworking, so productive, award-winning. I felt the same way about my career. I was so hardworking, first in the office, last to leave, the whole thing. And so how did that kind of manifest itself in terms of how you felt about how much you were putting in? And yet the love wasn't coming back.
Yeah, that was a huge light bulb moment for me when I realized that all of the accolades, all of the awards, the loyalty, again, as I mentioned earlier, the weekends, doing emceeing events away from my family, the trips that I had to take to the Olympics and Final Fours and, you know, NBA finals away from my family for weeks on end. Sometimes I went to Africa one time. I was gone for almost a month. I think about those moments. My son had just been born. He was only 9 months old at the time.
Yeah.
I think about the risks that I took, the time that I spent away from my family. And while I was loyal to them, they were not loyal to me. And unfortunately, call me naive. I really was naive. I look back and
me
go.
Me too. That's the word I use. Naive.
Yeah, why did you think that they would help? Because that's what you're supposed to do. And that's who I am as a person. When I see someone who is down and out, when I see someone who's being mistreated, I'm the girl who will say, no, you don't do that to people. I've never been afraid of anyone. And so for me in this situation, I thought, Well, I've got to speak up for myself. I speak up for everybody else. So I'm speaking up for myself. And so, you know, here we are, but I would do it all over again. And the reality of it is they know.
Yeah.
They all know what they did. And well, they may not see it as workplace bullying. They may not see the aggression of cussing you out and telling you to sit your ass down and so on and so forth as bullying, but that's exactly what it is. It's psychological abuse. And I will liken it, as people talk so much about sexual assault, domestic violence, what they fail to realize is this is the same kind of abuse. Those don't happen, but for the foundation of psychological abuse. It's all rooted in psychological abuse. And then from there, it moves to domestic. Then it moves to sexual assault. But it's all about how are we being groomed by these managers and coworkers to keep us silent by treating us in such a way that we feel complicit in going along to get along. And I'm just not that girl.
Yeah. And I admire you so much for it. I mean, because I wasn't that girl. I wasn't that guy.
Mm-hmm.
I love the job so much and I was scared to lose it. And so I just kept trying to work harder and better. What I will say is, though, I was kind of the empath in the newsroom. So when other people were feeling abused, they would come to me. I had one television show. I was a senior producer on a syndicated television show, kind of female oriented talk. And the staff was 95% women, mostly young women. I was a senior producer. And I lost count at a dozen women who came into my office and are bursting out in tears because of the toxic work environment. And I was under the same strain. They, you know, it was toxic for them. It was psychological harassment to me.
Yeah.
Because I was near the top. And the bosses were all women in this particular case. And in other jobs, I worked kind of near a park in Midtown Manhattan. Not many parks, but there's
one
in Midtown Manhattan. Yeah. And it became the place of refuge, kind of, where people in my workplace would say, hey, can we take a walk? And walk around the park and they say, what do? I feel like I'm about to get fired. And it wasn't because of lack of production. It was because the bully wanted them out for various reasons. So I admire that you took that stance and you represented yourself and your colleagues, which is a really tough thing to do. And many of us don't. And I regret it now that I didn't do it, especially for myself. I have to say, I look back at it now, and I'm not a shy person. I was a leader at staffs of 50, 75 people. I had staffs around the world. And yet I didn't have the confidence to say, wait a minute, I'm really good and I'm not going to take this. I don't deserve it. You know, people, it's usually the CEO or the number two person. And so let me ask this, and you talked about too, and I wanted to relate this to you. I think you mentioned to me that your son went off to college. My son just also went off to college. And I think you've thought a lot about, as you mentioned, you listed how much you missed in his upbringing because of your devotion to work.
Yeah, let me tell you something. There was an eye-opening moment. He's actually a junior in high school, almost to college. He's almost like your son.
Okay.
But when we moved to Florida, this was 3.5 years ago. He was going to be an eighth grader. He's now a junior in high school. And one day I picked him up from school. I'll never forget it, Andy. We were in the car just about to get on 275 off of State Road 70 in Bradenton, Sarasota.
Yep.
And I'm making the right turn. And before we make the right turn, we're first at a stop sign. And as I start to pick up a little speed to get onto the interstate off the ramp, I looked over at Ian and he was just glowing. And I just said, honey, I just want to let you know I'm so proud of you. I'm so happy that you're thriving. You're doing well in school. And just thank you so much for how you have navigated this new environment, new teachers, so on and so forth.
Yeah.
And he says, can I tell you something? Sure. He says, I decided to come here. 30% was for me, but 70% was for you. I said, what do you mean? He says, well, every time we would come to Florida, you just loved being here. You loved vacationing here. And I knew it made you happy. He said, I knew you were going through so much at the job and I just wanted you to be happy. Andy, ooh, I'm getting chills when I will never forget that moment. And it hit me because as much as I thought that we were doing a great job of shielding Ian from what I was going through, trying to whisper, talking in the garage, going to the basement, he could feel, he knew that I wasn't happy.
Yeah.
He knew his mommy, and his mommy wasn't happy. But he knew, if I can do this, and if it makes my mother happy, then I'm willing to, you know, take a hit, if you will, or to yeah. sacrifice, even though it wasn't a sacrifice for him. I mean, he's missing his friends and all of that back in Indiana. But yeah. he says, if I'm willing to help my mother to be happy, and he's an eighth grader. And that's when I said, you know what? I will never not be available for my child again, because I know it took so much out of me, because the rumination and the, you know, the challenge of trying to navigate workplace abuse. But I said, I will never, ever do that again. And so that's why I'm speaking out, because I want people to understand that even though you're going through this, your family is also mortally affected. Their yeah. souls and spirits are dying with you. And I just don't want men and women, I don't want anyone to go through the experience that that I did, which is you've lost those years. There are pictures, Andy, that I look at of my son when he was 9 and 10 and 11 years old. And I have to ask my husband, when did this happen? What was going on? Because I was so enmeshed in the mess at that job. Yeah. And I took my family for granted, not intentionally,
no.
but it literally takes your mind away from what's really important in life. And that's when I said, wow, you know, for him to have made kind of a sacrifice, if you will, for me, because he wanted his mother to be happy. And so I just don't want anyone else to go through that. Life is too short. Our families, our kids, our aunts, our uncles, our parents, our grandparents, our family, our friends, they need us. And if we are working in a place that is not healthy, we're spending 40, 50, 60 hours. We're spending more hours of the week with people who are not our family. And when we're being abused, we're taking it home, and our families are affected, and they deserve better. We deserve better. Everyone deserves better.
Good for you. Let me ask this.
Yeah.
I don't know if any of us who have gone through this get over the trauma, but you're certainly getting through it. I can hear it in your voice.
Yeah.
So for those watching, and you've kind of explained a little bit about how you've done this, but for those that are still in it or just a few months or years out of it, how would you describe the best ways to get through it and to come out so much better as you are and helping bully victims and victims of psychological harassment?
I would say the very first thing is to take an inventory of where you work. And that can be hard and challenging and difficult, because being honest with yourself means that you might have to make that decision to leave if the environment doesn't change. And knowing that you might have to make that decision, there's so many other things that you have to consider: the financials, your livelihood, where will I work? Do I need to move? And so a lot of us don't want to deal with the truth because we don't want to deal with the what ifs. And that's very, very difficult. But once you sit in the truth, I totally believe this. Once you sit in the truth and you're honest with yourself, there is a freedom that overshadows the negativity. And when you make that decision and you say, okay, I've taken inventory, this is no longer healthy for me, will the environment change? If the answer is no, then you have to make a decision to leave. Because if you don't, I promise you, your soul will die. And or unfortunately, some people take their lives. And that's yes. just the real, you know, result of this. And you deserve to live. So knowing that, once you've made that decision, after you've taken the inventory, then start creating your exit plan, whatever that looks like for you. And everyone's plan is different based on their livelihoods and, you know, their family situations. But once you make that decision, the third thing I would say is, after you've made the decision or you've done the inventory, you've made the decision to leave, the third thing is to definitely seek advice, meaning get a therapist. You will need one. I still see people. I had an EMDR specialist. I continue to rework and rewire my brain. I've learned that this trauma will live with me forever. So I'm just learning how to navigate around it and to not allow triggers to affect me so it doesn't immobilize me, you know, because this can lead some days to, I just want to be in the bed all day and I just don't want to think about it. Or I would just want to be in the bed and think about it and ruminate about it.
No, I hear you.
And you have to give yourself grace for those moments. Yeah. And the fourth thing is,
please,
as you're going through this journey, it is a journey. It doesn't happen. The healing process is not quick. It, for me, it probably will be lifelong. And for most trauma patients, I would say, been through workplace abuse and trauma like this, they say it will be long lasting. It will never leave you. Trauma just doesn't end. You just learn how to navigate around it. But the last thing is to begin to talk about it. Because I believe when you speak truth to power, it takes the power away from the abusers. And you're able to say, I see you. I know what you did. And now I'm going to help other people. So talking about it, creating, a community of other people who have gone through this as well. That's been very liberating for me to know that I wasn't alone, because I thought it was just all me and I didn't really know that this was a thing. So understanding that other people have gone through this and creating a community of people who are being part of a community of people who want to change the system, that we're not just sitting around going, woe is me and look what happened to me and I'm upset and I'm never going to forget it. It's okay, this happened. It's not right. What are we going to do about it? What's the solution? I'm all about solution oriented. So I'm using the story as the foundation for change. And once you go into that mode of change, all of a sudden, just your power comes back, your voice comes back, and you just feel more resilient than ever. And that's kind of where I am in this space right now. Doesn't mean that life is perfect, but it's definitely better than what it was before.
Well, it seems like you're using your voice to heal.
Absolutely.
And I'll speak from just one person.
Yeah.
Hearing you, getting to know you, listening to you is certainly helping me heal. And I thank you. And I know how many people you must have helped at that television station and how many thousands of people you've helped by the videos you're producing. Mm-hmm. And again, by speaking up and not being silent. So thank you for that. And along those lines, Andrea, this was such an engaging and informative conversation for me. Okay. And I know brothers, and I'm sure people are looking for more information. So where can they contact you, learn more, and to get involved in what I think is a mission, if you will, and an energy growing and that you're leading. So tell us a little bit more about how people can reach you.
Well, it is absolutely growing. This is, I believe, a pivotal moment in history. There are so many people, thousands of people who are now sounding the alarm about workplace abuse, psychological abuse. And the fact that all of us are working together in an advocacy forum for change is just so humbling. It's also powerful. And there are thousands of us who are part of End Workplace Abuse, which is the advocacy group that was formed by two women, Deb Falzoy and Vicky Cordomanci, a little over 5-6 years ago. And for some reason, I just believe that everything happens for a reason at the right time. They put some kind of information out on LinkedIn and on Facebook back in November of 2023. And they said, hey, we want to know if there are people across the country who will join us in this fight. And the very first conversation, we had over almost 200 people from around the country on this Zoom call. Right. And so since then, many of us have become bill directors and chapter leaders in our states. And we are bringing other people on who've experienced this. And we're now doing something about it. We're now talking to the legislators in our states and saying, we need to pass the Workplace Psychological Safety Act. It benefits everyone. It benefits employees. It benefits companies. It allows people who have claims of workplace abuse to be able to have an outside party that is not human resources to investigate the claims, so that it protects both the families, the person who is saying that this happened to them, the claimant, in addition to the company. And it keeps it clean. It keeps everybody truthful. Because as we know, and as I say, human resources is not your friend. They're there to protect the company. And so they're there to mitigate their losses. And where there is no protection, they're 9 times out of 10 going to find a way to silence you by maybe giving you a settlement. But at the end of the day, for me, it was never about the money. It was always about the truth as a journalist. And I wanted to, and I did sue them in federal court, but I realized near the end that I could not prove one thing, which is they did not call me the N-word, which are two ways that you can prove intent.
So I know.
I'm thinking to myself, that's not right. And so knowing that, I said, well, how can I use the story to bring truth to power, to help people understand the nuances of discrimination and even racism, to lend I don't even want to call it celebrity, but just my public persona, if you will, because I know a lot of people thought, how could this happen to you? You were on TV every day. You looked happy. You were laughing and joking. And I tell people, that was me, but it was also my job. Yeah. It was my job to do that. It was my job to remain professional. But behind the scenes, like so many people, you're dealing with these aggressions in the workplace. You just don't know what to do with them. So now we have a plan. We have a solution. And right. So I just encourage anyone who is going through this to go to endworkplaceabuse.com, where you can learn everything that you did not want to know, but you will find out about workplace abuse. And you will realize that this is a thing. It is not just something that happens in the US of A. It is happening all over the world. And there are organizations, and we are all collectively working to end this and to hopefully change laws in the country, in this country. And I believe it's going to happen. We have a potential bill sponsor in Indiana. Michigan is close to having a bill sponsor. Illinois has a bill sponsor. So we're all doing our part to make sure that we push the agenda and that we make it safe for everyone.
Great. Andrea, thank you for your voice and your advocacy. And thank you for your time. Final word from me. Yeah. Bully targets and those of us in toxic work environments, let's aim to change the workplace for good.
Thanks. Amen.
Amen.
Amen.